Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA. I was just trying to think who would be more welcome in our studio here than an old friend and somebody who I've known since the day he entered politics. And to that end, I'm delighted to welcome back the Minister for Arts, Heritage and the Gaeltacht of Conda Cary, Jimmy Dinahan. You're very welcome.
Thanks, Adrian.
You know, an awful lot has happened, and there's hardly a portfolio through the years that you haven't has been stuck in. But let me ask you about now relatively new formed a collection of a portfolio that actually seems to make sense. But how did that grouping come along?
Well, the grouping was there up to 2002, and the previous minister in Arts, Heritage and the Gaeltacht was Sheila de Valera.
Mm-hmm.
She is now retired from politics. And then it was changed. The arts was put in with sport and tourism. And it would have, I suppose, a comfortable enough fit there with sport and tourism. But obviously, the Taoiseach wanted to have change and to maybe change the orientation of departments and so on. So he put back in arts with heritage and the Gaeltacht. And it's working quite well. There is obviously that huge connection between the arts and with our natural heritage, with our built heritage, certainly, and also with the Irish language as well. So it fits quite well. My Minister of State in the department is Dinny McGinley from Donegal, who lives in a Gaeltacht area. He's one of the finest Gaelic speakers, Irish speakers that I've certainly ever heard. So we have a very good partnership, I suppose, in ensuring that the Irish language is well looked after. The Irish language actually has not been used, I would say, for a long time as much as for the last year and a half, because both Dinny McGinley, obviously, very much a native speaker, but also the opposition spokespersons as well can speak Irish. So the Dáil is now hearing a lot more Irish, which is great, really. We should obviously speak our native tongue there a lot more, but certainly it's been spoken at this moment of time, and there are a lot of changes been introduced. There's a 20-year strategy now for the Irish language. There is new legislation on Gaeltacht areas and how Gaeltacht areas are governed. And actually, yesterday, I was up in the New York Irish Centre in Long Island City, and I was delighted to meet two individuals up there who were actually teaching Irish in the centre. And they were telling me that there's a lot of interest. And interest only, I asked them about the composition of their classes, and generally it's coming from second, third generation Irish, which is it's very, very heartening and encouraging that the second, third generations would be continuing in the tradition.
You're not old enough for this, but in my day, it was considered to be somewhat burdensome in many areas. Not up in Mayo, because we had a particular tendency to learn everything off Scaoilge in the Irish language, including history and geography and everything but the catechism, and definitely math and whatever. But there was a kind of resentment that without Irish, without Gaelic, you would be limited, particularly in higher education, and begrudges, of course, at that time, said, and besides, it's a dead language. Well, that obviously, didn't help the situation. When did the revival kick in?
Well, we have moved on since then. Back then, Irish was compulsory, for example, and most subjects were taught to Irish, which made it very difficult for people with any learning difficulties. And also, if somebody wasn't a natural Irish speaker, obviously, they were disadvantaged too. But through people like the great John B. Keane, for example, I think Gabe Byrne, who was a great broadcaster back in Ireland, they were very much involved in the language freedom movement, which removed compulsory Irish and made Irish more attractive generally for people to study and to take up. So there's a great growth at the moment, actually, in Ireland, in Gael Scolana and Gael Coláiste. You know, a Gael Scull would be a primary Irish school, and they're sprouting up all over the country. And then a Gael Coláiste, then obviously, would be an Irish secondary school. And there's a lot happening now outside Gaeltacht areas that didn't happen before.
Right.
But the Irish language is not simple. It's a very musical language. And you would think that anyone that would have gone through instruction in Irish through primary school, then through post-primary school up to 18 years of age, should be able to speak the language fluently. If they did that in French, for example, they could do it, or other languages. But the Irish language is difficult enough in that sense. It must be. Otherwise, we'd be all speaking it quite fluently. Mm-hmm. But then there is that issue with the Irish language, now that you raise the subject of standardisation. For example, Donegal Irish, which is very musical and rather beautiful to listen to, is different from Kerry Irish, from West Kerry Irish, and Connemara Irish is different than both.
Right.
So,
And we were caught in the middle. We didn't pay that much attention to what was going on in down in Kerry. We had enough difficulty being stuck between Connemara and Dunanall and Donegal in our own day, because it seemed like it was, there were nearly two different languages. But the interest in the dialects, in the presentation of the Gaelic language, was and continues to be something that a lot of people want to know at all. They want to get a feel for not only the Gaelic language, but basically the different not only dialects but also.
Absolutely, but I think, Adrian, to be very frank with you, the target audience should be very much the adult population. Because the adult population would have time to learn Irish.
Yes.
If you overburden young people with the language, you kind of turn them off the language and create a kind of a negative reaction towards the language. But if we are serious, in which we should be, about the preservation and the continuity of our language, and Padraig Pearse, I think, that said that a country without a language is no country, I think it's very important that we would encourage more people to speak the language and to maybe direct our efforts more at the adult population, people who have finished university, people who are retiring as well, older people who are retiring young nowadays and they do computer classes and so on, and I think they should be encouraged to do Gaelic classes as well. And we're adopting that policy at the moment. Actually, in the department, we're looking at that policy at the moment of encouraging the older population to take an interest in the language and to try to speak it as much as possible. It's quite challenging, too.
Right. But it is happening. It's catching on.
Oh, definitely, yeah. But it's only right. I think in Europe, we'd be possibly the only country in Europe without our own language. And it's very important for your own just confidence as a country, that you would have your own language. And it's quite useful, actually, even when you are on holidays or if you're doing business, to be able to speak in your own language, because somebody else need not be able to understand you. So there are lots of advantages in being able to speak your own language.
I think many immigrants have at least picked up some words, some phrases, some bit of Irish that becomes you know, a part of your adult life. So it's not foreign to say, excuse the pun, but it's not foreign to say that people have a bit of an interest bred into them. And so, you know, despite the challenge.
Well, no, we've all definitely an aptitude for the language, and it's a very musical language as well.
Mm.
And obviously, we would have it in our, I suppose, DNA, a love of the language and an understanding of the language. So for that reason, I don't think the language will ever die, but I would like to see it expanding and more people speaking the language, and just trying to speak the language as much as possible. In the past, maybe academics maybe frowned upon people who couldn't speak it properly because of grammar,
right,
of not using the correct tenses and so on. But I think now the emphasis should be on speaking the language, and if you're understood in any way, it should be acceptable. So people were discouraged from speaking the language too much because they weren't absolutely exact in their grammar or whatever. They weren't accurate. So I think we've moved on from that. Now, the whole emphasis now actually is spoken language, and in the exams as well, there's a bigger percentage of the marks for the spoken language.
And then came texting, which became extraordinarily liberal, and Facebook and all of that. So it is moving very much into, you know, current communications.
Well,
so you don't get a slap if you don't, you don't get it right.
But even with texting and Facebook and modern communications, people still speak to each other, and kind of direct contact through verbal communication is still very much the most popular way of communicating, and certainly that's why I think that language will always be important, and people will have to communicate through language, and that's why I think that there is a role certainly for the Irish language with Irish people, and people too who are actually coming to look at the language now and learn the language from other countries as well. That's actually increasing in popularity, where you have now students of languages looking at the Irish language and feeling fascinated by it, and also tracing the connection between the Gaelic language and other European languages as well, because they all derive from the Indo-European languages.
Right.
So there are, like, the likes of the Irish Studies course in Notre Dame and so on, here in America, and I'm sure in Fordham and other places, there are people in there studying the Irish language and looking at the connections with other languages and so on, and the history of the Irish language and where it's going and what direction it's taken and so forth.
My guest, Jimmy Deanahan, TD, Minister for Arts, Heritage and the Gaeltacht Arts. The progress, the massive undertaking in the field of the arts and its impact around the world, but particularly in North America. The expectation, I would say quite frankly, was superseded by the tremendous success of that. How do we take in the colloquial, the roadshow through America, how do we get that to translate into bodies in Ireland, into the gathering 2013? What are your expectations there?
Well, certainly there's huge Irish connection here with a place like Manhattan. Last year, for example, we had the Imagine Ireland initiative, of which Gabriel Byrne played a major role as cultural ambassador, and we spent $4 million in that Imagine Ireland initiative.
And that's €4 million.
That's a lot of money. I don't know if say, the USA would spend as much money in some other country promoting culture. So that was a very serious attempt to maybe reimagine Ireland here in America, because we got such very bad press, I suppose, because of the collapse of our banking system. When you read headlines in the New York Times going back a few years ago about Wild West banking in Ireland, and also when people saw for themselves what was happening here in Manhattan, when you had Irish developers coming here and paying inflated prices for property here.
Right. And not just in Manhattan, but actually if we take a look at it, right across the United States, where, as we always have been delighted and grateful with the great investment of the U.S. and Ireland in terms of actually employment, Ireland and the investments here brought a tremendous amount of employment as well. And it's not worth delving into whether during the Celtic Tiger years there wasn't as much.
Yeah, but the point I was making there, Adrian, was because of what happened during the Celtic Tiger period and the damaged image of Ireland, the impaired image of Ireland, that Imagine Ireland was designed to repair that damage.
Absolutely.
To some extent. And I think it succeeded. And just, you refer, and you know more than anyone, the value of culture, because you have been promoting Irish culture for 41 years now to this program. But certainly, we punch way above our weight when it comes to music, when it comes to some of our great actors, when it comes to dance, for example, and to other art forms. And we have produced some of the
and
greatest
to film,
actors.
Which again made... you know, many areas, when you talk about arts and Ireland, that is akin to the Chinese menu, because there have been great expansions in different areas. We come to interpretive centres, we come to, it's hard to separate art from the island of Ireland, because...
Yeah, well, it certainly is, and if you go back and look at, for example, during the monastic period, before the Vikings came, for example, that was our golden age, as we learned going to school.
Sure.
And it was the time of the Ireland of saints and scholars. But there was something to that, because, first of all, if you go to the National Museum in Ireland and also in museums around the world, you see artifacts from that period.
Right.
You see a lot of them in the Scandinavian countries, because obviously they pillaged them.
Yeah.
But also from that period, you have a large number of manuscripts which showed, like the Book of Kells, a very high degree of learning and creativity. And that creativity is still there. We are still a very artistic, creative people, and we display that in various ways. And the fact that you have eight of the top probably... American ICT companies in Ireland. They're there because of our tax rate of 12.5% corporate tax rate, but also because they have employees who are very creative. And the five main internet companies now here in America are in Ireland as well, and they have huge workforces in Ireland.
Yeah.
Because as a country, and not being patronizing now or boastful, but we are we're a very creative people. We can think differently, and maybe it's because of our climate, because it's not too hot or too cold, and we don't get too much, I suppose, sunshine in one way, but we don't get too much cold either, generally speaking.
Right.
So, generally speaking, our climate is fairly stimulating as well. And then we have this great tradition going back to, as I said, monastic times, when we were leading Europe, and when Ireland at the time saved Europe. You're probably familiar with books like from Cahill and Kenneth Clark's documentary Saving Western Civilization.
Yes.
We're very much part of that. So going back to the arts will always be valued in Ireland. There'll be always people writing. There will always be people painting. We love to act. And we love certainly to dance, especially if it's Irish dancing. And we love music as well. So we're just it resonates with us. And that will continue, and then we take that to the outside world as well, and they just love Irish music and Irish entertainers here in America. They're very popular, as I said.
Yeah. As we look to 2013, and as we look to the massive plans that will translate not only into regions and counties, but actually into every parish in Ireland, every townland in Ireland, and that's not a stretch. Heritage, again, becomes the magnet to not only Irish-born, those with Irish connections, but I think to a great number of the people who maybe have already visited Ireland at another time, are those who've always wanted to visit for whatever reason, for maybe Irish in spirit or Irish in the magic of what is there. But it all comes down to heritage. And to what degree are, you know, how do you separate our heritage from the arts, from the tremendous, you know, plans that are on foot? There is nothing bigger than the upcoming year and getting bodies into Ireland and getting it there.
Well, it's all interconnected. People come to Ireland, obviously, for our natural landscape, which is part of our heritage. They come from our cultural landscape as well. And music and other forms of art is very much part of that. So both heritage and culture really is very much intertwined. And it's that whole offer, I suppose, that Ireland provides that makes it so attractive. Last year, actually, over 3 million tourists came to Ireland and they cited their reason as cultural experience. So the reason why people come to Ireland, obviously, and unfortunately maybe they don't come for sunshine, but then what's left, it's our landscape, which is rather unique because of, I suppose, it's blessed by all the rain we get,
mm-hmm.
and also to our culture and our people as well. But certainly Irish music is very different. The archaeological remains of the past
Absolutely.
Are very different, be it forts or be it our old castles dating right
mm-hmm.
back to the time of the Normans, be it the Viking remains or going right back to the time of the monasteries, the remains of those. So we do have a lot of stories to tell and a lot of, I suppose, sites of real interest, like the be it Skellig Michael down in Kelly
yeah.
or Brúna Bone up in the Bine or the Rocky Cashel or
yeah.
Care the Fields up in Mayo, or Connacht Noise, there's so many more.
Right.
Ireland really is one big heritage site, and I suppose if you started turning over sods, it's a huge archaeological site as well, because
mm-hmm.
there's as much under the earth. And that was proven when we were carrying out major roadworks, which was a good aspect of the Celtic Tiger.
Right.
We have a very good road network, for example. I travel from Kerry, if I leave Kerry at 10 o'clock on a Monday evening to go to Dublin, I'm in Dublin at 12:30 without breaking any speed limit. I'm on a dual carriageway from Adair to Dublin and you drive on.
Yeah.
So that network is very good, but the fact is that a lot of archaeological objects, artefacts, were uncovered during all that excavation, and there were archaeologists on every site. There had to be. It was a European stipulation, and all of that immense amount of archaeological remains, and all of those, they're there now. They're stored
mm-hmm.
by the National Museum. So if you uncovered any other part of the country, you'd probably get a similar amount of artifacts going right back
sure.
maybe for 4,000 or 5,000 years. So that's what makes Ireland very interesting. Both from a heritage point of view, both from a cultural point of view, we do have a unique offering. So next year, speaking about the gathering, I would hope that people would go back to their villages, to their towns, to their townlands, go back and try to trace their relatives. Unfortunately, because of during the Civil War, a lot of our records, most of actually our civil records, were all destroyed in the forecourts, but there are the palace records there and the census of 1901-1911, which would connect with a lot of people from the U.S. because the 1901 census, obviously, people had left in the 1840s after the famine, the 1850s. Their families would be still in Ireland, total families. In many cases, it was only some families that left. So it would show you the interest, Adrian, actually, in genealogy at the moment. The census report, 1901-1911, since they've been put online, have attracted over 700 million hits.
Mm-hmm.
So that's extraordinary. And Irish people, they like to trace their roots. We're great to trace our relatives, and that's true. There are people that can go back six generations that say such and such a one was my sixth cousin.
Right.
The same as President Obama said that his cousin down in Moneygall was his eighth cousin at that particular time. He called him Henry VIII. But we do track our relatives, and people are interested in their relatives. For example, I have relatives here in New York. I have a good few relatives, but the Dinahan's there, Brooke Barrett, Brooke Dinahan.
Yeah.
She's owns there the Affinity Hotels. I stayed there, the Affinity, the Affinity Dumont there. I was here this weekend, but we go back a few generations.
Absolutely.
But there are relatives everywhere, and I only stumbled into them by accident.
Amazing.
There are connections everywhere, and I would hope that the gathering now, that people will reconnect with their townlands, their families, and friends as well. You can have, maybe you may not have a relative in Ireland, but you can build up very good friendships with people.
Absolutely.
You don't have to be related to them.
Yes.
And to go back and discover where your family were from, or whatever connection you have with Ireland, that in itself is an experience. But you don't necessarily have to have a living relative back there to do that. You can enjoy that experience by just going back there and seeing the churches and the schools and also the little towns, the villages where people came from. And there are lots of parts of Ireland still relatively untouched. A town like Listowel, actually, where I come from, it wasn't really affected by the Celtic Tiger. So the whole streetscape, the square in the store, for example, is the same as it was back in 1780 when some of the houses were built, or the early 19th century. The houses may be painted differently, but they are the same houses. You can notice that from looking at old photographs.
Sure.
And all the little streets in the store, for example, and that's only typical of so many more towns, they're all still there. So the Ireland that people will go back to now, they haven't been back in the recent past, is very similar in ways to the Ireland that their maybe, you know, forefathers left, you know, 100 years ago. So there's still that connection. There are still some of the old local pubs there, the local public houses. You know, a number of those are under pressure now, but a lot of the infrastructure and that connection that was there back then is still around.
I'm sure that your constituents, your Kerry listeners, are wondering when we will mention sports. And indeed, within the framework and within the GAA, they will be bordering on being vexed that I didn't bring that up first. But we leave it to the last, because you could, you know, of your different ministries through the last 25 years, most people associate you with sports, and they won't let you forget, indeed, that, you know, when Kerry thought there was no competition from anywhere at all when it came to Gaelic football, and many still believe that, you know, you won medals for Kerry, for football, ranging from, you know, 75, 1978, 79, 80, and just to see if you could outdo yourself, in 1981 you captained a team, you know, and a great team already. So tell us, sports, and indeed, what you're in town this week for, which anybody attached to the Gaelic Athletic Association would think that perhaps you're here for no other reason than to celebrate and to show the tremendous game that which is taking place in New York on this Sunday.
Yeah. Well, I was in town for a number of reasons, but I suppose the main reason I was here, I received an invitation from the Gaelic Players Association to present on behalf of the Irish people and the Irish government a special American-Irish Heritage Award to Don Keogh of Coca-Cola. And Don has been very good to Ireland.
Amazing.
Coca-Cola came to Ireland about 1973, and they were one of the first of the major, I suppose, multinational companies that came to Ireland. And because of people like Don and because of people like Craig Barrett of Intel, a number of other major companies came to Ireland. And now we have something like 500 American companies in Ireland, employing directly over 100,000 people and probably indirectly maybe over 200,000 people.
Right.
And really pushing our exports and certainly making our country a better place. Just 8 of the top ICT firms are of American companies are in Ireland. 8 of the top American pharmaceutical companies are in Ireland. 15 of the top 20 medical devices companies, American companies, are in Ireland. And we have so many American companies in the International Financial Services Center, a lot of American banks. So we have huge American investment in Ireland. And one of the men responsible for that, together with the IDA, of course, and the ground here, they've been very good, would be Don Keogh. So the Gaelic Players Association with the GAA and Croke Park combined, and really with a superbly organised event, I must say. Declan Kelly is a local, very successful Tipperary man here. He was the chairman. He did an excellent job with Desi Fowle. And also with a number of other people, Donald O'Cusick from Cork, they did an excellent job, I must say. And Don was really appreciated getting this award.